Audio hosting for Comics Are Great is provided by Kablam, KABLAM.com, and the new Indie Planet Digital. Check out hundreds of independent comics for your iPad or Android tablet at IndiePlanetDigital.com. This time on the show,
there's nothing mini about mini comics.
We're all alone, and we're all special.
And perspective, they got computers for that, don't they? All this and more on Comics Are Great.
It's Comics Great, the visual storytelling show recorded live every other Wednesday at the Ann Arbor District Library, lovely downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan, on the corner of 5th and William. This show is broadcast, streamed live at comicsaregreat.tv and later collected as a podcast at comicsaregreat.com. My name is Jersey Drozd, cartoonist and teaching artist. And sitting to my right, is this stage right or stage left?
I have no clue. I'm not a theater guy.
You see, you struck me as a theater guy.
I never. I was in one play in high school. That's it. Anyway, but sitting next to Jersey is me, Paul Story, comic book writer and writer of other stuff as well.
And we're going to talk about the Watchmen prequels.
Oh, are we? Fun. That should be good.
There's been plenty of press on that. We do not need to go into that. And the Twitter stream on Monday was just
ridiculous.
Yes.
And you know what? I responded and retweeted a couple things, and then I walked away from it because I was like, Twitter is not the place to discuss this. Mm. If I end up face to face with somebody to discuss something like that, there's just too many nuances to be like, 140 characters. It's because it all boils down to, I like it, it sucks.
Well, I think we can safely say that you are a Watchmen prequel apologist.
Okay.
Yeah, that was your stance on it.
Basically, anything that puts money into Dave Gibbons' pocket, I'm happy about.
Yeah, and I refrain from discussing it because I really couldn't care any less about the subject. But Paul,
couldn't you, Jersey?
I could not. I mean,
even though it's a creator's rights issue,
There's better places to have that fight.
Okay, there.
Yeah. So rather than, if we're going to have that fight, I'd rather not do it to benefit DC.
Perhaps we should introduce our guest.
I was going to get to that, but okay. I wanted to say,
while we were on that big tangent, this is what we do.
Yes, Paul, we're going to play around with having you on the show every episode for a while.
Yeah,
see what people say. See what viewer demand. We'll do an American
viewer
Idol.
Viewer demand, get rid of him. What the heck were you thinking?
But this is all part of my plan. We've talked before about moving the show out into the fourth floor conference room where we can have a live studio audience, and at which point this will become more of a Conan O'Brien-ish show, which means I need an Andy Richter. Not that I'm anywhere near as funny as Conan O'Brien, but I'm just as petulant. So,
yeah. And nowhere near as tall.
No, not even close, but I'm almost as pale. But anyway, so who else do we have in the room?
Pale. You're not pale, you're red. You're like a tomato.
That's because I'm excited about talking about comics. That's my Polish blood rushing to the surface. But let's talk about somebody who isn't quite so red, a little bit better, easier on the eyes. Steven, I didn't ask how to pronounce your last name.
McCraney.
That's what I thought, but I didn't want to butcher it.
It could have been McCraney.
I've heard so many versions.
I get people who can't figure out how to pronounce Story. And it's like, I know it's spelled different, but really, how else could you call it? You know, it's like, oh, there's two R's. I don't know what to do.
But Stephen McCraney is the author of, I can hold it up for the camera here. I can say Mal and Chad, and I got a copy of Food Fight in my hand right now, which is the one that's coming out in stores pretty soon. Is it this
one? Yeah, it was out about 3 weeks ago, I think.
Okay, Mal and
Chad. So it should be in your nearby Barnes & Noble and maybe some other local bookstores.
And soon to be in your new Amazon storefront. They're talking about putting up actual physical stores now.
What?
Huh. Yeah.
Oh, that would.
Oh, I'm actually ahead of Jersey on some bit of news.
Internet news. Yeah, you spend some time on the Facebooks. I'm sure you catch a few things every now and again. But anyway, so Mal and Chad, we should introduce people for those people who haven't heard of this book yet. Oh, you are at malandchad.com. Yeah. And then we're going to talk a little bit later about doodlealley.com, which is another neat thing that you do. And then Stephen McCraney on the Twitters. But Mal and Chad, this is a story of a young mad scientist.
Yeah, it's pretty standard as far as the stories go. It's a young, kind of a boy and his dog kind of a story, and the boy is a boy genius who has all kinds of inventions. And they go on adventures together. They're best of friends. The twist of the story is that Mal doesn't want anyone to know that he's a genius because he knows they'll take him out of his fourth grade class and put him into a college class. And he has this crush on this girl that he really likes in his grade, and he doesn't want to be taken away from her. So he keeps it a secret, like kind of like a secret identity. And that's just the basic premise.
And Chad is the dog, which is a very unusual name for a dog, actually. That was the thing that caught me off guard, is when I saw the title, Mal and Chad, I figured, okay, well, Mal's got to be the dog. Chad has got to be the boy.
Now, see, whereas the thing that struck me was I assumed that Chad was going to be the mad scientist and Mal was, you know, his boy.
But but Mal is wearing the robe.
Oh, you got to.
But don't call it a robe.
Yeah.
it's actually known as a coat.
Lab coat. That's a running gag in the series. But we could show some of the artwork on... people could go to malandchad.com to see more.
Would you like me hold it open?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Vanna. Yeah. So you can see that this stuff is very clean, very crisp. The storytelling is super, super sharp. But, I'm always a fan of...
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is pretty good. I'm always a fan of any story that is aimed at children that doesn't talk down to children. And I think that you pulled that off with this story.
Oh, I really appreciate that. I was actually having an interview with a radio host about 2 weeks ago, and I was telling her about kind of my struggles and my insecurities and how Mal's insecurities kind of mirrors my own insecurities. And she asked me if I had grown out of them since I was a kid. And I was like, I don't think so. I think there's less of a barrier between kids and adults than we'd like to admit sometimes. I think there are different orders of magnitude with the type of problems they deal with, but I think they deal with very similar struggles that we do.
I wish I could pull up, and I don't want to do it just for fear of like pausing the show. But Greg Rucka recently posted an interesting thing about writing Superman and writing characters who are accessible to children, and the difference between writing gritty and writing sophisticated. And he said you can write stuff that's okay for kids that's sophisticated. It just means you have to be clearer, and then you have to have more vibrancy and more developed ideas in the story. And there was somebody recently was posting on a blog, and it was one of those things that just gets the hairs on the back of my neck standing up with anger. Is when they said, like, oh, I'm having so much trouble writing this story. It's really tough, and I'm struggling with all these themes. And why is this so hard? It's a kid's story, after all.
Oh, yeah.
as if difficult themes and complex ideas have no business being in a kid's story, because kids just don't get it. Now, one of the things that you cover in this book, Food Fight, and I'm not going to be spoiling anything for anybody, but there's a lot of stuff about him wanting to be in a club. And there's a certain club, and they're being very exclusive, and he wants in, and... Oh, man, if this isn't stuff that happens in your grown-up life with people making their exclusive little niches and cliques, all the stuff we're supposed to outgrow in high school that people carry into the office or carry into their social circles.
Or carry into the comic book business.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Or carry into Comic Cons for that.
Yes,
Go ahead. Sorry, Steve.
Yeah, that whole... one of the things I noticed, each Mal and Chad story does seem to have kind of like a moral to it or some kind of message that just talks about those social issues. And I noticed that while as I'm writing it, I'm also kind of dealing with those issues. Like especially you go to Comic-Con and there's this real sense that there's these insiders and outsiders and you want to be someone on the inside. And so it is directly kind of based off of that whole experience of seeing cartoonists that you really admire and they all seem to be hanging out and you want to be part of that circle. And it's something that I struggle with a lot, and I had to almost read my own book to try to figure out, like, it was like I was really processing through these issues here and kind of speaking through Mal as just far as he really wants to get into a club. He really wants to be a part of something. He doesn't want to be an outsider, and he does anything to try to get inside.
And so. another thing that I think is really lovely about how you constructed the story is that the harder he tries, the worse things get for him. So he tries to start his own club, and that quickly backfires when his own club members sort of form a coup and take over the thing without him even knowing it's happening. And it's not until he stops trying so hard to be accepted and then just do the thing that he has to do that suddenly it's like, hey, you know, you really should be involved in this. And then I won't spoil what happens after that, because there's this really lovely moment where... Mal has like sort of like a realization of like what these club things really ultimately
mean. An epiphany,
as it were.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like, you're right. This is something that all us cartoonists deal with, and you hear in the hungry young beginning cartoonists, it's like, if I only just got so and so to blog me, if I only just got to hang out with that group of people over there, you know, if I could just sit down for dinner with the flight crew when they're talking, you know.
Yeah. Well, the kind of the funny thing about that is, though, especially at Comic Cons, usually you can. Like, I mean, usually most people, you know, at the bigger cons, it's a little harder because everybody's doing business and, you know, mm-hmm. whatever. But almost everybody's approachable. And sort of like you're saying, you know, once you stop trying so hard,
yeah.
it becomes a lot easier. You know, it's that's one good thing about the industry is I find that there are a lot of people who are really approachable. And the ones that aren't, you really don't want to spend time with all that much anyway.
Yeah, but try telling. Go ahead, Steven.
My first Comic-Con, which is about 5 years ago, I was really in love with the flight crew, and I wanted to make friends with them and
right.
and just kind of be a part of it as best as I could.
I'm sorry, I didn't know I opened an old wound.
Concept. What's that?
I didn't realize that by using that example, I was opening an old wound.
No, you hit it. You hit the perfect nerve. That's exactly how. That was exactly kind of. If I was to pick a group that I've really wanted to be a part of, it would definitely be that really incredible anthology that they put out together. Are you guys familiar with the term booth barnacle?
It was probably coined about me.
Oh, yeah. It's someone at a convention who just stands at a booth and doesn't buy anything and just kind of doesn't do anything and... You try to get them off of your booth because they're just stuck there, and that was definitely me. My first convention there, I almost feel silly about it now thinking back to it. But I just kind of planted myself there and tried to talk to whoever I could, and I only later had the realization it's very hard to make friends when there's a table in between you, and and you know, only after like developing relationships online and kind of talking with them and having like kind of a more of a long-term relationship that you know, you actually begin to form friendships and other things within the industry. But
I did not expect us to go there, but that was a good little mini talk on being social in the industry, right? And then when all else fails, go pick a fight about the Watchmen prequels, right, yeah, Paul? That works. Yeah.
Well, and you know, as you're saying, if people read Mal and Chad Food Fight, they will then learn... you know, through symbology, the way to properly approach people.
Yes.
To kind of
a heuristic symbology of obsequious consequences. I'll just throw in a couple other words.
Oh, there you go.
That didn't even make any sense. But
no, obsequious, really? There,
I just needed some multisyllabic words. Mm. But anyway, so you know,
or multisyllabic,
whichever you want to choose. Yeah. I was using the Croatian pronunciation. I wanted to open this up again and look at this book and show these pages because it was one of the things that, Stephen, you made clear to me, which I was really surprised by, is you draw this stuff, you draw these graphic novels digitally something called Manga Studio.
Manga Studio is this amazing program. It is really good for doing that smooth Jeff Smith kind of line. If you're wanting to do anything more organic, it kind of... lacks in that area, but if you're seeking to kind of put together a very clean Jeff Smith kind of line work, it's very ideal. It's pretty incredible.
Now, if you wanted to say just do your layouts in Manga Studio and then print them out on board and then, you know, ink it for that more organic look, you could do that, right?
Yeah, I thought about doing that because it still has a lot of incredible time-saving tools that even to someone who works traditionally, I think that they could find just skip a lot of the steps that they're usually involved in when you make a comic.
I actually hear that a lot from people where they're sort of like, oh, well, I started doing Manga Studio and it increases their production time so dramatically because just the various tools that they can use kind of just streamlines the process for them.
So, real quick, what specific parts are you talking about that are saving you time on? Like, what pre-production or production parts?
They have a lot of just kind of time saving options. It's kind of like having your own assistant. I'll be able to show you guys these neat tools that we have here, but there's a panel cutter tool which does all of the panel ruling for you. There is a perspective horizon point where you can set a horizon point and all lines will be drawn toward it. So you can kind of skip a lot of the struggles that perspective grids can usually give you when you're drawing traditionally.
We talked about this in Comics Are Great episode 24 with Chris Hastings, and he dropped that bomb on me that there's a perspective tool that will automatically map your lines onto a perspective grid without you having to do all the pre-ruling with rulers and everything. My jaw dropped.
Yeah,
and then 20 people lined up on the internet to say, "Geez, you didn't know about this guy."
Yeah.
it's funny. I was talking back end of last year to my friend Laura Innes, who does the Dreamer webcomic, and she had a bunch of us were at her house, and she had this table set up that like had an extension of paper that so she could set up perspective lines.
Yeah,
you know, so she could, you know, get her points in there. And then she's like, and then I found out about, I think it was Manga Studio. She's like, you know, I designed this whole desk extension so that I could do this. And now, you know, the computer's going to let her do it.
You kids and your new technology. Yeah. there's a couple time-saving things in there, but I'm wondering if we could get a demo on how these inking lines work. Because, you know, I just got it myself. There was a sale a couple months ago, and I got it for, like, I got the full version, the EX version, for $60, which is, yeah.
Oh, man. Good.
Wow.
Yeah, so yeah. I didn't really have the money at the time, but I was like, well, $300, $60, I got to pull the trigger on this. It was a 15-minute, one of those Amazon 15-minute sales, you know?
Yeah.
But I haven't had a chance to really goof around with it yet, and I've been told that the inking in Manga Studio is way more natural and analogous to true inking than, say, in Photoshop. I'm wondering if you can show us a little bit on how you do what you do.
Sure, I can do that.
All right, this is why everybody should watch the video at comicsaregreat.com/CAG46 is when, after this episode is done. Mm-hmm. That's where it will be, the video.
Yep.
All right.
All right, can you guys see my screen?
Sure can. I'm going to see if I can reduce my picture. So,
I think there's actually a deal right now. I'm not quite sure. It might be on Amazon, but they're selling the full version for $99. So
yep. The price... Scott Yoshinaga of Nemu Nemu, NEMU-NEMU, just posted in the chat. Manga Studio EX4 is on sale now for $99, and it's at, well, it'll be in the show notes. It's at fastspring.com/macware/product/Manga Studio EX4Mac? And so on.
Blah, 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 blah.
But you can just do a search for it, and I believe it is a Mac-only version of Manga Studio, as I understand it, that's on sale. So.
I've been thinking about getting Manga Studio, and I don't draw anymore. I'm like, maybe.
It'd probably be good for lettering
comics.
Yeah. Hopefully, if we have time, we can go into. But I'm so curious to see somebody actually do some drawing. And another thing I'm going to put in the show notes is Eric Orchard, Inky Bat on Twitter, posted some links to some great Dave Gibbons videos where he did like a full-on Manga Studio webinar. And there's a YouTube link that I'll post.
Oh,
in
that ties into our earlier discussion of Before Watchmen. See,
now recursive.
You bring it right around, Jersey. Yeah. Well done.
It almost looks like I know what I'm doing. So, so we're looking at some page spreads on the screen.
Yeah, this is how I organize my book. You start out by you can create what's called a story file, and these are all of my pages placed down, so I can get kind of a bird's eye view of the work. And this is actually the third book, which I'm currently working on right now. Hopefully we'll have it out in maybe December, but we'll see. And I've created kind of a demo page to just show you guys some of the basic stuff we can do. I think there's also, and I'd have to find the link to it, but Doug Tenapel did a Manga Studio demo as well. If you guys are familiar with Ghostopolis, I think he did the entire book in Manga Studio.
And that guy does 2 graphic novels a week. So
yeah, exactly.
He's part mutant, but also I'm sure Manga Studio helps a little bit with some of that.
Yeah.
I was hearing that for one of his recent books, I think Monster Island, he just inked on top of the thumbnails. He didn't even go to a pencil stage.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a new kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I think Mark Norton, who does Battlepug.com, mm-hmm. I think he also uses Manga Studio. It seems to me like he's one of the people that was talking about how much it's sped up his production time.
More and more cartoonists are switching to it. It's really astonishing to me how quickly people are abandoning Photoshop. And it's weird, as a guy who has been in the Adobe ecosystem since 1994, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, well, that's the industry standard. Of course you use it. But I'm hearing more and more people are using this now, and there's got to be a reason. That's why I'm hoping we can see Steven do some drawing here.
Yeah, let me just pitch it for you. So right now I've created a panel ruler layer. I think the learning curve in this program is a little steeper than Photoshop, just because the tools are a little quirkier. But once you understand it, you realize, oh, this is a program that is built for making comics. So I've opened my, this is a panel ruler right here, and I have opened my panel cutting tool, and I'm going to just rule out some lines right here.
Nice.
So you're just like chopping out bits of the master page panel.
And then it's got presets on the gutters too.
So I'm pulling, and then I just pulled the panel off the page to make a bleed.
Mm-hmm.
And and I'm done.
Wow.
So I'm going to rasterize it, because up until this point I can change the positions of the panels, and usually I'll pencil it at this point so that I can still move around elements before I decide to commit to it. But I'm going to just raster it to show you guys what it gives you. Rasterize it. Let's see here.
Which is changing it from paths to actual pixels.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So here it's turned into pixels, so now it's inked, so to speak. And what I really like about this is on my inks layer, when I do start inking eventually, I can draw a line, and it won't go beyond the panel.
Nice.
Because it automatically fills in the gutters with a white. So that kind of... Because often when you go to the edge of a panel, you want to try to imply that there's something beyond it, and that's just a really neat shortcut for doing that.
Now, is there an override setting if you wanted to be, you know, breaking the border? Or?
Yeah, if you want to be all Walt Simonson about it.
I was thinking Gil Kane, but Walt is an excellent example.
Well, thank you.
See, do you mean breaking the border? Do you mean like...
Yeah, like popping out of the panel.
Yeah, having
yeah,
you know, somebody's
now
armor.
Now that it's the last layer, you can either draw on top of it in a different layer, or you can erase...
Oh, that's
erase the panel as you please. You can just work with it that way.
And once you've got it erased, that function stops. Nice.
So
you got some penciling layers in there. Do you do your penciling in the program as well, or are you importing sketches?
I do my penciling here. I actually, this book, I tried to do thumbnailing, but I found I couldn't. For whatever reason, there's something about paper that forces you to commit to the lines you're making. And I noticed that when I was trying to thumbnail...
Oh, we lost your audio there. Oh, I hope we didn't lose the connection. Oh. It looks like that Skype just choked a little bit. And
no, I was adjusting every scene.
Hey, he's
like
Steven?
On this layer, all I can do is draw in blue. And in Photoshop, sometimes I notice when I was inking. What?
Oh, we've got a little bit of a delay going on. I'm just curious if you could back up about like 5 seconds of what you were saying, because we lost your audio for a few seconds there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. This is a pencil layer. Everything that's drawn on this layer will be that nice photo blue. One of the things that I've noticed that in Photoshop happens when in Photoshop is you can... Like sometimes you'll try to keep your pencil layer separate, but I would accidentally ink on top of the, on top of my pencil layer, and I wouldn't know it. But with this, the way they have it set up, it's pretty much impossible, because whenever I go to the pencil layer, it's always going to be in this light blue color.
Oh, I see. Okay, so yeah, because like if you had multiple layers in Photoshop and you just started drawing between layers and you set your ink color at blue, you wouldn't necessarily know what layer you're on unless you were looking actively at your layers palette. But this will automatically change whatever ink color you have to this non-photo blue look.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I hear you can color in this program, but I haven't really figured it out. So it's great for black and white, but like I said, the color of your pen changes depending on the layer that you're on, like on the setting of the of what, because like colors are determined by layers. It's kind of associated that way, and you really don't change colors. I'm sure there's a way, I just haven't figured it out. But I think Photoshop is still the best coloring tool as far as coloring goes.
Now, you're using a Cintiq, right? That the graphics tablet that is essentially a screen that you draw on.
Yeah, I did use just a stylus for a little while, and that served me pretty well. I know there's a hefty price tag on the Cintiq, but
all right. But you were able to do this on a regular graphics tablet as well?
I was. It wasn't as natural, you know. It didn't flow as nicely, but I think you can get to a certain point where you're really comfortable with the tablet, and it's still a really good program just because of all the extra little perks.
Yuki in the chat is saying that you can change which color will be the alternative black on the penciling layer, and blue is the default, but this person always switches theirs to red. So I'm guessing just by like double tapping on the layer or something, you can change, or in that color palette in the bottom of your toolbar, you can change which will be your penciling color.
Yeah, down here.
I see.
These three boxes here is where you can change the color of the layer. And sometimes I'll just have, you know, four or five different layers with different colors on them if I want to work in color, because you can still export the colors. It's just kind of weird working one layer at a time. I set up this file to be kind of like a cooking show where you set it, you do your prep time, and then you're like, and now allow 20 minutes to bake, and then you pull out we finished things. So
how good is your Rachel Ray voice?
Yeah. I'm going to turn the settings up. So here's the finished pencil layer for part of this. And then I want to show you the perspective tool. One of the tricky things about this program is it's tempting. You want to use the tools, but sometimes the tools will use you if you're not careful. For instance, if you do use the perspective layer, the perspective tool, if you're inking with it, then everything seems very like a diagram, kind of very straight lines, and it's hard to. It makes it very inorganic. It looks like a manga, basically, like with the very precise technical drawings. So what I like to do is I'll use the perspective tool, but on a pencil layer, and then I'll just use a freehand inking layer on top of it.
I see what you're saying. So when you do your background elements, you want it to have that a little bit of that freehand wobble,
yeah,
to it, rather than a very crisp, diagrammatical, precise line on it. And that's a taste thing, right? And some people may.
It's just you got to know that it's there, or else you know. Mm-hmm. Hard on you. So I'm going to I'll just delete this layer, but just to show you the perspective tool, which is really neat. I'll do some vague lines on my pencil layer of what I want the room to look like, and then I'll set a perspective point, which is this right here, this line, and I'll set the horizon line, and you can have two up to three perspective vanishing points. And then once you start drawing, let's see here. Once you start, then all of the lines are going to go toward the layer, and it's really easy to kind of carve a three-dimensional space out for yourself.
It's not really showing on the screen just yet. Oh, I think we've got like about a four-second delay on the video between your audio. There we go. Okay. So every line you draw on the ceiling is now pointing directly to that vanishing point you put behind Mal's head.
Exactly, yeah. And that really kind of pops the drawing, because it's hard to eyeball perspective all the time. Sometimes you can get away with it, but. So I'll just make these really quick dictations of what the perspective is supposed to be. And then when I go back and ink on top of it, I can make it more organic by just the pen that I use.
So it's automatically making your vertical lines perpendicular to the horizon line as well.
Vertical lines?
Yeah, like the table
yeah,
legs.
Exactly.
Oh, that's crazy.
So So you, so whenever you go, you can do your 90 degree lines, but then any angled line will go toward the horizon line. And it's a little, I don't know if you guys will be able to see it, but I also have way, way out, like maybe if you were to put it into real space, it would be 200 feet away from the page. I have this perspective horizon point. I can't even scroll that far. That is really far off the page, but instead of just having a vertical line, some of them are kind of slanting toward this horizon point that's really far off the page.
So it's two-point perspective, but just the other point would be, to use Paul's example of your friend Laura Innes, who had, this would be if she had a table that went out of the door of the house and down the street to the bus stop.
Exactly, yeah. So that's kind of a neat advantage. And then the last couple of things I was hoping to show you guys. It is, if you're going to letter, it is kind of nice, but the lettering's pretty funky.
That's a funky thing in the chat, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I've got the lettering here. I've got the lettering here that I usually put the lettering in before I start penciling, which is another really nice aspect, because it's nice to consider the speech bubbles as part of the composition.
Yeah.
But once you get, it's finicky, but it works. So I used to actually, on my first book, I would export it and letter it in Photoshop, but with the recent versions, you can get away with it. So let's see here. I'm gonna do some inking real quick and show you guys why I'm so excited about this program. There, I'm on a vector layer right now. And what is so neat about the vector layer is you can edit your lines after you lay them down. There's a principle in inking where you want to, I don't know if you guys are too far behind, but
now we're watching you ink
the video, but
we're watching you ink Mal's head, and now we're looking at you drawing some different lines next to the word balloon there.
Yeah. So I've drawn two lines. When you're inking, if you have two lines approaching each other, you can imply that they go behind each other in different relationships. It's kind of hard to explain, but just depending on how thick they get or whatever, like this line, the line at the bottom seems to be, it's more, it implies that it's going behind the object. I'll just show you that in a different example.
We're talking about line value here a little bit, yeah?
Yeah. You'll see it a lot in Jeff Smith's work where he'll have the line approach something, and then... So I'm going to start drawing Mal's hair again. All right. Where do you guys see right now? Are we caught up?
I see you do the little cowlick, and then you did the back contour of his head.
Oops. Yeah. So the
now we're looking at your Twitter. Okay, yeah. there we go.
it was an instinct. So there's a type of, you can set your eraser so that when you erase part of the line, it will delete itself up to the intersection of another line. So just to show you what that looks like.
That's pretty cool.
And what's so useful about that is when you're like if I was inking his sleeve down here, I could make the sleeve, I could just draw straight through and delete the bits that I don't need. And now I have line work that implies that his arm goes like directly behind the collar.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. Yeah, and this is the kind of stuff that when I still ink on paper. And so when I'm drawing with my Croquel, I do that exact thing where I'll just intersect lines because I want it to look like a natural thing, like the foreground background relationships. And I'll just go into Photoshop and very painstakingly erase all of those crossovers pixel by pixel.
Yeah. So it's makes me so excited to be able to have that tool like that. There's other ridiculous things that I don't really use much. You can also grab the points and move them around if you want to just adjust things slightly.
So you can actually adjust like the vector paths. So these ink lines are vector lines then?
Yeah, after you've done it. These are vector lines, and so you can export it at whatever resolution you want. I at 1200 DPI, which is, I think, why the lines look so sharp in the books, is because it's a 1200 DPI book.
Wow. What are your file sizes like?
File sizes, you'd be surprised. The Manga Studio is a really tight program. It seems to run really a lot faster than Photoshop. Sometimes when you're inking in Photoshop, you'll drag the pen across the screen, and it takes a while for the line to catch up to your stylus. But you don't see that lag here in Manga Studio. And the file sizes, I'll put them in TIFFs. So TIFFs are naturally very compact, since it's just white and just black. And they actually are relatively manageable.
Super cool.
And I'm trying to think if there's... Yeah, we're going to zoom up to the final page here. Speech bubbles. Another thing that's really useful for speech bubbles is because we can use these vector paths, the way I draw my speech bubbles is I'll make a circle. And I'm going to... Here's another thing. You can also increase the smoothness of the line. So I'm going to increase something called the correction, which allows the... it takes the wobble out of your line and naturally smooths it.
Yeah, this is in a lot of vector drawing programs like Flash, and I believe it's in Illustrator.
Yeah. And that's a really nice thing to have, to get that extra level of smoothness. So I'll just draw the speech bubble, and then I'll use that neat eraser tool to delete the parts that I don't need.
Yeah, so now you're just going to make it all look like it's one. Oh, my gosh. That is crazy cool. Okay, oh, cool. That alone is a super handy tip, because that's going to make your inking lines that much more natural if you're not being so concerned about getting them to ink. Because, like, you know, when you see people working and they'll be inking and they'll, like, oh, I'm coming up to the intersectional lines, they'll slow down.
Yep.
And that'll affect the arc of the inking line, right? And so it's a finished page.
Now so we're... it's nice to be able to have the forms.
Yeah, I think we lost you again.
Yeah. Your audio keeps blipping out, and I think it's probably because of the screen sharing. We'll kick off the screen sharing in just a second here.
So can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you okay now.
Okay, yeah, that's I think that's about all that I had to share with you guys today. If there's any questions from the chat or anything, I could answer if it was.
Yeah, somebody is saying in the chat that coloring a 1200 DPI TIFF file will require lots of memory, though. But yes, indeed.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, no question. Funny enough, just yesterday, we had Scott Yoshinaga. No, not yesterday. This would be on Sunday, so a couple days ago by the time of this recording. Scott Yoshinaga and Audrey Furuichi of Nemu Nemu, who I mentioned earlier, they were doing a talk at the Ann Arbor District Library via Skype, all the way from Honolulu. And it was super cool. So it's a new thing we're doing at the library, where we have this monthly comics artist forum, where we have a guest speaker come in, and we're trying to alternate between local guests and then guests from all over the country.
And they won't fly you out to be in Honolulu with them.
No, that would have been remote. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I don't have that much sway here yet. But
nice.
The library will sponsor a trip to Hawaii for you guys.
Yeah. Oh, man. I would. Yeah. I'm working on it. I'm twisting my mustache. But anyway, they did a demo of how Audra works in Manga Studio, and she takes the finished line art and then imports it to Photoshop and then works there. And I think she jacks it down to 600 DPI to work on it there. But even then, 600 DPI coloring is going to be pretty... extensive. Oh, Scott Yoshinaga found the fast spring sale for Manga Studio for Windows. Scott, you are awesome. So that's awesome. That's in the chat. Go ahead, Steven.
No, I was just saying that's awesome.
So we can shut off the screen share and go back to looking at your handsome face, and we can finish up because we got only a few minutes till we're going to switch to book review time. Man, super useful stuff. I also should say that, we're talking about being in groups and being in anthologies. Steven, you were in an anthology not too long ago, right?
It feels like a while ago. Are you talking about Parables or?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was a really exciting initiative put on by Mike Mahak, who does Cleopatra in Space, which is a webcomic you guys might be familiar with. And he was looking at the format of the Flight comics, because anthology comics was kind of a new thing back then. And so he's like, we should put together these stories and but have the kind of the whole theme of the works was stories of faith, stories of love, and kind of stories with more religious themes. So a lot of really talented artists got together, and we made a book. We got everything ready to go, and I think something happened in the market, and the publisher backed out, and it's taken a while. It's now available. I forget the website. We finally did find a publisher, but
ParableComic.com.
It felt like it was 4 years too late. So, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's ParableComic.com. Mike Mayhack. Oh, just covered up your mic when you said that. So how do you say it again? Mayhack. He's tearing up the Google Pluses with some of his Batgirl and Supergirl comics too. I don't know if you've seen any of those.
Those are great.
Yeah, they're super, super cute. But yeah, very talented artist. People in the chat are already saying that, he's pretty incredible. So, okay, well, before we kick over to book reviews, we got to say, what events are we going to be at? What kind of shout-outs do we want to do for stuff that we're doing? Where are you going to be next, yeah. Stephen?
I'm actually getting ready to... I'll be out of the country for the next 6 months, living in Japan. So... Wow. I'm broadcasting right now from my parents' house. I moved all my stuff over there, and I'm going to spend the last couple weeks with them before I leave in the middle of February. I've got this really neat opportunity. I'm going to be moving over there. I'm still going to be working full-time as a cartoonist, but in my free time, I'm going to be helping out with a missions organization called Mission to the World. So I'm really looking forward to that.
You're going to still be working while you're over there on your comics too, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing I'm nervous about right now is how do I get my Cintiq through the airlines safely. Yeah. But I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be a neat, just a neat experience.
That is one, for anybody who's ever lusted after a Cintiq, that's got to be the one downside, is that's an expensive and delicate piece of equipment. You know?
Yeah, traveling on anything that's got that kind of price tag, you know, and coupled with the...
Okay. Yeah, for sure. Like, you can't just throw it in a backpack, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going to be in Japan, and people can follow you at Stephen McCrane on the Twitters. Oh, we didn't even get a chance to talk about Doodle Alley. We're going to have you back maybe when you're in Japan.
Oh, okay.
So in the middle of the night, you'll Skype in.
Yeah, I'll Skype in when I... at 1 in the morning or something. There's actually, as far as plugs go, I am running a contest on my website right now. It's at malandchad.com/contest. And it's kind of a basic fill in the speech bubble thing. We have Mal and Chad with the cover from Food Fight. Mm. And if you can figure out what they're saying and send in your submission, and if your submission gets chosen, they'll send you signed copies of the first and second book. And I will draw you as a Mal and Chad character, and you'll get a drawing from me. So
super cool.
Awesome.
Okay, so and we got to give Paul a shout out because we're about to do book recommendations. So, what do you got there, Paul?
My latest to hit the stores, Twisted Journeys number 20, Peril at Summerlin Park. It's the Twisted Journeys are a combination of prose and comics, primarily comics, and the reader gets to pick their own path through the adventure. I got to work with Sandy Carruthers, who. Did a couple other projects. I worked on Terror and Ghost Mansion and You the Great Conquering the Flood. Terror and Ghost Mansion was another Twisted Journeys. And it's you know, the response on these has been really great. When I talk to librarians, when I talk to kids and parents, they are really, really jazzed about this. Mm-hmm. The whole kind of being able to go through all the different variations on the adventure.
Choose your own adventure.
I didn't say that.
you're not infringing on any trademarks here. I'm doing all the infringing on trademarks here. But find your fate, choose your path, pick your go, and whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So and plus it gives you, you know, it's interesting because really it does kind of bring the choose your own adventures and books like that have always sort of, you know, now people do video games and that's, you know, they go to a certain point and this, you know, this happens. And it's sort of like, you know, in a way, video game in book form.
What a great segue for our the guests who are about to walk in the room, because I think video games are where cartoonists and cartooning writers, comic book writers, need to have their eye on in the future for what is going to be the future of media, transmedia, and all that stuff. That's as
I set more you up for that.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. You did. Thank you. Thanks for the softball.
I was going to say almost like I planned it.
It's almost like you know what you're doing. Yeah. Paul's story can be found at storyville.com. I'm a sad man.com and twitter.com. I am so sad.
No.
And Storyville on Twitter.
or Storyville on Twitter. That's StorrieVille.
Yes. And on Facebook, look for the man with the explosion behind him. Oh, you're not using that avatar?
I'm not using that. But I may have to switch back because that was a pretty awesome one.
That's an awesome avatar. So on the Facebooks and on the Google Pluses, you're everywhere where there's internet.
That's true, although I haven't been doing the Google Pluses as much as I should.
That's okay. Twitter and Facebook.
Twitter and Facebook. And you can be bored about me going like, oh, I did some exercise and boy, do I ache.
Also, when you get mad about Watchmen.
Okay.
Mad about other people getting mad about Watchmen.
Now, that's actually probably more accurate.
That's close to the truth.
Anyway, Stephen, great meeting you. And
hey, I really appreciate it.
And keep up the great work. That stuff's amazing.
Well, thank you, Paul. So, okay, right. while we do the switcheroo with the guests, I hope you can stick around, Stephen, for the book recommendations part, because Sharon Iverson is about to come in here, and I just know that she's got to meet you. We got to get your books in the library if they aren't there already.
Absolutely, I appreciate it.
Well, while they come in, we could talk a little bit, very quickly, about the Doodle Alley comics essays that you do. Can you tell us about those just for a second?
Yeah, I'm really excited about them, and I'm sad to... I'm not updating currently, but there's about... seven or eight essays on creative sustainability on my website called doodlealley.com. And they're basically, I just break down simple concepts for workflow and how to organize your life and just try to tell it in comics format, which is, just a great way to break down information and just show concepts. And so they had a lot of great poll. People were very excited about it, but I had to start work on the next book, so I wasn't able to keep updating.
But it's a new take. Well, I shouldn't say new. It's a unique take on the whole, you know, productivity, staying motivated kind of blog post, because you do it actually in comics form. You do it in your natural language, right? Which I think is super cool. Makes them that much more compelling for a cartoonist to read at any rate. So
I get to, it's a nice platform to be able to talk about just all of those struggles that you feel like you only have as you're working in your apartment or your studio or wherever you are all by yourself, and it's just all these brick walls that you bang your heads against, and just try to put it as encouragement for like any artist, really, not just a cartoonist, but
And one of the reasons we talk about this stuff and then we do these kinds of blogs is because when you're starting out in the stuff, as we talked about at the beginning of this episode, when we start out, we're all alone and special. And boy, those kids over there look like they're having an awfully good time. And oh, who knew that this was a little bit like work? We always need something to kick us in the butt every once in a while to keep us going again. Not self-help necessarily, but like a little bit of like, hey, I was there too, or I am there. You know, you're not quite so alone and special, right?
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
But that's at doodlealley.com, and thank you, Eric, for posting it into the chat. So now I turn to our next segment, book recommendations. We got a full house today. We got three kings, two queens. I guess that makes me one of the queens.
and who's missing? You said three kings.
Oh, we got Dave Carter.
Oh, Paul.
And Paul's story, and then we have Stephen McCraney.
Yes.
Dave Carter. Okay, I'm so excited to have you on, Dave. There's a lot to talk about. Well, there's a lot here that makes your presence important to my mission with Comics Are Great. What do you do for a living? You run a library. You run dusty old books and.
Well, okay. So I'm an engineering librarian at the University of Michigan. I'm also the video game archivist for the University Library, and I also select the comic books for the library's collection.
That is so cool. So you run a video game. We got a video game library, people, in Ann Arbor, Michigan. If that doesn't come on, and then you also have comics in the University of Michigan library.
Yeah, so I always say, you know, I work now with video games and comic books all those times. So my mom said when I was 12 years old, You're wasting your life reading those comic books and playing those video games, and now I get paid for it. So
well, they say turn what you love into your job, yeah. Right? So, but we should also say that you are actively present on the internet. You are at Dave Reads Comics on the Twitters, mm-hmm. and you did a talk at Ignite Ann Arbor 5,
right? With same time that you did.
Yeah, that's there. Right. Yeah, we did. I set you up with a whole big talk on why comics are so awesome. I did a talk called Comics Are Great, and then you followed up with Awesome Comics You Should Read, where you dug
I did a book talk, basically.
You did. but I was pleased to see that you went into like the deep recesses of Silver Age with like Doom Patrol-ish kind of stuff with Purple Gorillas, which is from the Julia Schwartz days of put a gorilla on it, it will sell, right?
Right.
So people can find that at igniteshow.com. You can just do a search for Dave Carter or Awesome Comics You Should Read, and we'll put a link in the show notes for that. So
great.
So what are you here to talk about besides the mini comics recommendations? Let's give a plug to this first.
Right. So I sort of butted myself into the podcast. Asked Jersey, can I come on and give a plug for our mini comics day we've got coming up? He's like, sure, when you want to come. We're doing the second annual mini comics day at the Duderstadt Center, which might imply that we did this last year, which is true. And so this year it's going to be March 10th, which is a Saturday, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. The Duderstadt Center is on North Campus. That usually means getting on a bus for a lot of people to come up to North Campus, but it can be done. It's only about 10 to 15 minutes. You can do it. It's also Saturday, so you'll be able to find parking up there most likely as well.
Parking is still free on Saturdays in Ann Arbor, is it not?
Depends.
Or is it Sunday? I'm thinking Sunday.
Sunday.
Is, whoops.
Yeah. Well, anyway. But it's the weekend and it's North Campus and Saturday, so you should be able to find parking up there. But anyway, what Mini Comics Day is, if you've heard of 24-Hour Comics Day before, where you try to create a 24-page comic in 24 hours, and we hosted one of those in late 2010, and it was great fun, and it nearly killed me staying up for 24 hours as the responsible adult.
Yeah, it's different after the age of 27 to do that, isn't it?
It sure is.
Yeah.
Anybody else could come and go as they pleased and stuff like that. I sort of had to be there. So I'm like, this is great. I don't want to do it again until I've waited long enough until I forgot what it was like to do that. But then we did Mini Comics Day, which was last year. There was International Cartoonist Conspiracy, I think is the name of the group.
Yeah.
They sponsored this National Mini Comics Day, and we participated as being a site for that. And that is just 8 hours and do an 8-page mini comic, which is much more doable. Mm-hmm. I think for people, you don't have to stay up all night. Don't have to be eating crappy food for 24 hours and plying yourself with coffee all the time and whatnot.
Make yourself crazy.
Right? Yeah. And so we did that too, and that was a lot of fun. And so we decided to do that again this year, mostly at the request of Phoebe Gluckner, who's the art school faculty up there. She's teaching her class on comics, and she asked if we would be doing that again this year because she wanted to have her class come and participate in the Mini Comics
Day.
So I'm like, yeah, sure, if you're going to strongly recommend that your class of 20 kids come and participate, then by all means, I'm going to open up that door and let that happen.
And this is open to the public, too. Yeah.
Open to the public. So anybody around? We did last year. I think we had about 15 people come in and participate. And it's a lot of fun. You're sitting there in a room with other people who are creating comics, and there's lots of buckling down and drawing, and then lots of talking and sharing and things like that. And it's
a social event too,
exactly.
Right? Because as Steven and I were talking about earlier, going back to this idea of like socializing and getting to actually be around other artists, this is a very what's the word for it? Solitary activity, making comics, right?
Right.
Why mini comics though? Why not a full? I mean, come on, mini. That's diminutive. That is not as important.
I beg to differ, Jersey. So mini comics are yes, most of them are small, although they don't have to be small. Our sort of definition of mini comics and the mini comic collection we have at the library is anything that's sort of handmade, that is one person doing stuff and then going to the photocopier or printing it off and then folding it and stapling it and doing it that sort of way. So some mini comics are indeed mini and small.
You can put them right there.
I chose some of the ones that were created at last year's mini comics thing. So this one is by Adam Buttrick, who also works at the library. It's his 4-page Freudian Fever. So he did that, and this is sort of a standard half-page size comic. And he did this as sort of a stream of consciousness. He was just like, whatever came into his mind next, that's what he put in the next panel.
Yeah,
putting that together. This one is mine that I did. It's the B Team and Too Many Monkeys, and it's stick figures. And anybody who says I'm not going to participate because I don't have any artistic talent, you will do better than me. And I did one with stick figures.
Well, this looks like XKCD to me.
Thank you. So there's no excuse for not coming and participating.
You're touching on something that's really kind of an important topic to me, is that people, as a guy who teaches a lot of comics classes, there's always that person who says, but I can't draw this, I can't draw that. And like, that's not what it's about, is it? It's about storytelling, first and foremost. And you can use, as long as you can tell that's not a cat, that's a man, then
right.
We're somewhere.
And sometimes it's an arrow pointing to something and saying cat.
Yeah.
Here's some other ones that were put together. This one here is really tiny, the mini and not so mini mini comics. Just these little one-page gags. Guy did. He penciled in ink. I just did mine in pencil and then photocopied off the pencils because I didn't have time to ink. Mm-hmm. That's another thing. When you're doing these quick, 8 hours to do 8 pages worth of comics, you don't have time to make it perfect. Mm-hmm. And so it sort of, I think for some people, frees them from having to be perfect and sort of just gets you to sort of spit it out.
Which
can be creatively freeing to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, a tight deadline will make you be very creative to get yourself out of that corner.
Right.
Very much so. And the mini comics have a history of being very guerrilla style, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Before there was the web, before people were doing web comics, if you wanted to sort of get yourself out there, you would do something, you'd photocopy, you'd take it to the conventions, you'd sit there at your table, you'd force it upon people, here, come take a look at my comic. And so that was sort of how people started getting used to doing comics and getting themselves exposed to people. And
back then, in the 90s, we called them ash cans.
Ash cans, there you go. Yep. So for recommendations, I figured since I was here to talk about mini comics, I'd bring some mini comics to recommend. And these are all local or localist mini comics artists. And if you've heard about mini comics at all, you're probably familiar with Matt Fiesel.
Mm-hmm. He's been on the show before. Yeah.
Oh, great. So he does Amazing Cynical Man. Is one of his. So I brought a couple Cynical Man comics here, and he does stick figures as well. And he does the most. Oh.
Okay.
So, are we okay?
Yeah, we're good. Yeah.
Okay. So he does stick figures. He does the best stick figures I've ever seen. And very funny, it's hard to describe his humor unless you read it, and then you immediately recognize it as a Matt Fiesel sort of.
It's very smart and absurdist, but it's not ironic absurdist.
Right.
He's not trying to deconstruct anything. He's like a true comedian, a real comedian making observations about how ridiculous human beings can be sometimes, right?
Yeah.
So he's not out to hurt anybody either, but he's still naming what is absurd and wrong and calling it out.
So great guy. So he's great. Sean Beery.
Sean Beery. I need to get him on the show. Yes.
Yeah, he's down in Hamtramck. I think Matt's down in Hamtramck too, isn't he?
That's right. Yeah. Right. And Sean Beery, I think, teaches at Specs Howard now.
Okay.
The visual arts college over there in that area. Yeah. So
So a couple of his, Cool Jerker and Homo Gal, which I was introduced to in the 90s.
Have you ever read this, Sharon?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's so wildly funny. Yeah.
It's they're the defenders of Detroit's Cass Corridor. Cool Jerk's powers are he can't be harmed by anything, and Homo Gal's powers are she's just awesome.
She's just awesome and really tough and very, very spirited. And yeah, Cool Jerk, he got his powers from, I think he was crossbred with some kind of
flatworm or something.
A flatworm, yeah. So if you cut his arm off, he'll just grow a new arm, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And she doesn't really profess to be a superhero as much, but she's sort of along for the ride with him as he's trying to be a superhero. Wildly funny comic.
Yeah, so I can show a few pages here for the folks at home.
Yep.
On that. And then Jumbo Jape is a collection of his Jape comics. It's 1 to 4 page little strips that he puts together.
Yeah.
I think Sean is probably for an older teen audience.
Oh, definitely.
His stuff is.
Yeah.
For that.
His stuff is a little bit on the edgier side.
Yeah.
He's also involved, as I understand it, with one of the what is that burlesque? Dr. Sketchy's burlesque drawing get together. So have you guys heard of this? It's like a traveling show. Steven, have you heard of this?
No, I haven't.
It's like you get together and it's just called Dr. Sketches. You can look it up on the Googles later if you guys are interested. But it's like a life drawing class, but it's got like a this kind of like a body burlesque kind of aspect to it as well. And that's the kind of stuff that Sean, like if you think of that, then now you can think of what to expect in the Sean Beery book.
Right. So another creator I brought is Suzanne Bauman, and she is also in Hamtramck. So apparently Hamtramck is the mini comics mecca of Southeast Michigan. And she does a lot of little smaller ones that she does. And her stuff sort of ranges from, she has some slice of life stuff, and she has this one here, My Mind is Made Up, is sort of a political commentary sort of thing, and Planet Piso is a humorous sci-fi thing. And I like, it's really kind of tiny, and you can see it sort of flips up and reads this way with one panel to a page on that. So another thing I like about a lot of the mini comics creators is they like to fold stuff and make things move in different ways than your standard 32-page comic book.
Have you gone to the Small Press Expo yet?
I've not been to SPX.
Or Mocha, for that matter. Those are both good shows for getting mini comics. And you find really weird stuff where people will make, like, a dodecahedron comic,
right?
They'll use origami and they'll make this comic that you can just roll around and look at, and it'll just move in all those different directions. The story can go in all those different directions. Yeah, you know,
we've got one in the mini comics collection at the library where it's on a scroll. It's a little tiny scroll and it's all rolled up, and then you put it in, you know those things, the gumball machines that you put a quarter in and you get a prize, and then that little plastic egg-like thing?
Mm-hmm.
So it's all packaged, rolled up, and then packaged in this little plastic egg thing. And it's just like, that's just great.
Yeah, it's weird because it's like guerrilla style, but at the same time, it's like an art object.
Right, right.
So, yeah, right. It's really interesting stuff being done in the mini-comic scene. It's not just about ash cans, you know?
Right, right.
Like how the publishers used to use it.
And then the final creator I brought is Pam Bliss.
Oh, yeah, and Michigan staple.
Yeah, she actually lives in northern Indiana, but that's close enough to Michigan, so we'll count her as one of our own. She comes to a lot of the conventions,
here.
Purple Gorilla, which you were just talking about Purple Gorillas earlier. And I just love, love, love her stuff. And I it's hard for me to describe. She's got a small town feel to it. A lot of her comics are about this group of kids who just likes to hang out and they have adventures in the woods and things like that.
I would put her stuff under the classification of like edgy Garrison Keillor.
Okay.
A little bit like Garrison Keillor if he was cool.
Right, right. And there's another one of hers I brought here, The Smell of Midnight, and it's sort of this long format thing. She's very experimental sometimes in her things.
Can you move it up just a little?
Oh, yeah, sure.
That way, there we go. All right.
So, each of these is one long panel, but then within that one panel, you've got several, like, pseudo panels going on. So it's here, then here, then here. She's just, every time I read one of her comics, I'm just so delighted to read it. She has a website that hasn't been updated since 2002.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't... but she's still making comics, and I've met Pam a couple times, and from what I've gathered from her, it's just not surprising at all that she would just abandon the website and just keep making comics.
You know Pam when you see her. You can see her across the floor because you always look for that fedora. The fedora, the long blonde hair, and the opinionated attitude. She's a lovely woman, and she makes really interesting stuff. Somebody's asking in the chat, since you are a librarian and your job is part of your jobs as librarians is to conserve things, how do you keep all these comics, these mini comics, in a good state?
Right, so when I'm not bringing them around here, we have to keep them in our storage space, so they're not out in the main collection.
Climate controlled?
Climate-ish controlled. we put them in acid-free envelopes, and then store them back in there. So they're you do need to request them from the desk if you want us to pull them out of storage for you to see if you come to the library. They're all the ones we have are listed in Merlin, which is the library's online catalog, so you can see what's there. Come into the library and ask us to pull the call numbers out, and we'll do that for you. Other ways to get comics, mini comics, a couple of the stores in the area. I know Vault has some mini comics, and Green Brain carries mini comics from local artists.
Mm-hmm.
Going to conventions, though, I think is the best way to get your hands on mini comics. Not only do you get them and get to look at them, you get to interact with the creators. And they're all very, I won't say they're all this way, but many of them are very gregarious people.
Yeah, I think that's par for the course. You kind of have to be in order to go to a convention. And if you do and you're not gregarious, you learn quickly to be gregarious.
Right, right.
Steven, were you a gregarious guy when you first started conventioning? Were you outgoing, like, hey, come on over to my table, I'm ready to talk to you? Or were you the shy guy?
I still kind of feel like this need to stand up wherever, like, for some reason, it feels like I'm more engaging if I'm standing behind the booth, but it's just not sustainable for a 3-day convention.
Your prescription shoes wear out.
Yeah.
No, yeah. For the longest time, I had a devil of a time not standing and like sketching or even like keeping that smile on for like a whole 3 days. Like when you do like a 3 day show, oh, that's brutal. That's brutal, especially if you do like a mainstream show where like not everybody there is friendly. But you do the indie shows like the SPXs and the Mochas, and it's a completely different feel. But eventually you learn how to be. Scott Yoshinaga is saying, we stand the entire time at San Diego Comic-Con. Scott, I don't know how you do it. I do not know how you do it. I mean,
that's amazing.
Wearing leg braces or something, you have to be. Okay, so we're going to move on to more book recommendations. I want to talk to, and Stephen, please feel free to select something if you want to give a shout out or a plug to something. But I'm going to turn now to the local comics, one of the people who's very important to the comic scene in Ann Arbor. Is that a better way to put it, Sharon?
Yes, because I just want Stephen to know that I talked to our comic book or graphic novel selector this morning and made sure she knows about your book coming out.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no, we've got to have it in the collection. When Jersey sent out the word that you were a guest, I went on your website and looked at some of your archives, and I'm going like, oh, my God, this is great stuff. I love the humor between Mal and Chad. It's just great.
Yeah, so, I forgot to mention, that just reminds me real quick. On my website, it's Mal and Chad originally started out as a comic strip that I did for my college school newspaper. And so there's over 200 Mal and Chad comic strips available to read on the website if you can't get your hands on a copy of the book.
Yeah, well, I noticed that I was just flipping through Jersey's copy here, and it's like, okay, it's not comic strip. You obviously had to rework this to get it done. But again, the humor is fabulous. I just love it. So that's coming to our library soon, and I think held up a little earlier. And the other is just one series. Do I hold it up like so?
You can put it here.
It's glossy, though.
Oh, you're right. Yes. So, okay. You can hold it up to this camera here. So you
okay. can see it on the screen. So this is Jarrett Krzyzewska, and I'm probably saying his name a little wrong. He actually started out as a children's book writer and illustrator, but his roots are comic books. And so Lunch Lady is a series that he came up with, and it was spun off of his... After his first book was published, he went back to his old elementary school, and there in the lunch cafeteria was his old lunch lady, Jeannie. And it just sort of ignited, you know, a curiosity in him. And she mentioned her children and grandchildren. He's like, you have children? You have grandchildren?
You're a human being?
Oh, my gosh. So from that sprung the whole idea, what are lunch ladies? What are their lives like? And so... three kids are speculating in the storyline initially. This one is Lunch Lady and the Cyborg Substitute. This is book one. And they're just kind of wondering about what is her life like on the side. And what you find out is that she indeed stands up for justice, and she can spin her spatula. Well, she has a sidekick, Betty, who is her assistant in the cafeteria. And they have a laboratory down below the cafeteria where all sorts of gadgets are created by Betty, including the spatula helicopter that is used in several scenes throughout the series. But and there's a spork. That's her fork-shaped radio phone communicator. All sorts of cool stuff. And so each book, she discovers something's going on. In this case, it's the cyborg substitute, and there's something really weird because Mr. Connell never misses school. He's the most popular teacher, and all of a sudden there's this new guy taking his place, and he's acting very weird, rejecting Betty's cookies. And so it becomes clear that he's not human and that there is something evil afoot. And so it's a series that now is six volumes long. I wonder, after having looked at some of his picture books, if he's going to turn back or if comics have totally grabbed him. Because
I
have
so.
A feeling that this is really where he wants to be.
Now, I've looked at, I don't know if you want to hold up some of the other covers. I've looked at the series before. I've read a little bit of it, and it has for what I would say is a PBS Kids kind of vibe, like the shows like Cyber Chase, Arthur.
Yeah.
So,
Interestingly, I wasn't sure either what the age interest area was, but he's been recognized 2 years in a row with his books by third and fourth graders, and his name has been on a marquee with that recognition in Times Square.
Wow.
Which he's very, very proud of.
Well, wouldn't you be?
Yeah. So, you know, that's just, his stuff is really fun, and I, you know, recommend it. Whether you're a kid or whether you're a grown-up like
me. Well, if you're a grown-up like me who actually watches Arthur and Cyber Chase and those shows and that, and genuinely enjoys them, then I bet you probably get a kick out of that, too. So did you have something else?
No. Well, I just had his picture books, but okay. I was just, yeah.
So that's a big one today is the Lunch Lady series.
The Lunch Lady series.
Which we'll put into the show notes. So, Stephen, did you have anybody that you want to give a shout-out to?
All my books are packed up right now.
You're about to go to Japan, so.
I recently got into,
I'm putting you on the
spot. There's this manga called, I think it's Four Leaf Clover by Mitsuri Adachi, if you guys are familiar.
I'll look it up too, Four Leaf Clover manga.
Maybe it's just Clover.
Clover manga, yes.
All right.
Clover was by Clamp.
Ah, yes. Dave knew. I should have turned to the librarian and said, "Do you know?" Rather than going to stupid Wikipedia.
Clover is by Clamp, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is by Clamp. So, are you talking about that baseball manga? That.
Yeah.
My wife is reading that right now. Oh, what is that one called? Somebody in the chat, help us out here.
Is it a biography?
It's a drama comedy series, and it's a manga series. It's about a young boy who's on a baseball team, and they have there's four characters. They each have one part of the Clover, Clover baseball manga. We'll find that right now.
Cross game.
There it is.
So, I actually did an exchange in Japan about 3 years ago, and I found Adachi's work while I was over there. I was like, this is so amazing. Why don't people know about this? And I was really excited when I saw that they were translating a copy. I think if you're a cartoonist looking to find something, a refreshing take on comics, he just has a really incredible approach to it, which I think the way that he works is he decides that there's only going to be one idea per panel. And sometimes like he'll only have a single speech bubble in a panel. So he's really like decompressed storytelling, really efficient with how he puts things together, and I really like the way his storytelling is so decompressed, so minute, I guess, so detailed that he can do things like show you the reaction before the action, which is kind of hard to explain, but he'll show a guy getting splashed in the face, and then he'll show the person who threw it, which is usually in comics you'll see like someone throwing the water in their face. But but he'll kind of switch things around because his storytelling is so decompressed. He has a lot of freedom to play around with how you perceive things.
Scott Yoshinaga saying in the chat that it's very 80s Orange Road-ish. Orange Road? I'm not familiar with that one, but Scott at least likes it. When you say decompress, I want to jump in and say that, you know, decompression has had a bad rap in the last 5 years, and because you guys are probably familiar with this, Dave, like this whole idea, like the mainstream superhero comics all trying to be more quote unquote cinematic,
right?
And so they have three widescreen panels per page, which and then like they thought balloons were passe, and but the decompression you're talking about, Stephen, I think is much more natural to comics. It's not trying to be a film. It's taking its time and it's being contemplative in the storytelling. Yeah. Does that sound fair to say?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. If you look at some of Osamu Tezuka's early work, there's this one comic that he does where he's just showing a child driving down a road, and he breaks it down into. I think it ended up being like a 50 page sequence just for a simple guy driving down a road and like braking really hard, and you can see the camera like zoom into the reflection in his eye, and he sees a dog in front of him and brakes really hard, and that kind of decompression. I think there's a certain amount of panels that you can or images you can choose to break up a moment if you're trying to portray a moment, and if you choose a lot of images, that would be decompressed. If you only choose like one, that's a little more compressed storytelling.
Right. But yeah, I felt it was important to make that distinction because some people attribute decompression to trying to act like a movie, and that's not really what it means, right? Wow. What a packed episode we had today. We're already over time, and I know that producer Matt Dubay is going to have a conniption if I don't wrap this up soon. So, Stephen, we should say one more time, for people who aren't familiar with your work, you could go to Mal and Chad Today and find out more about it. Yes. And you can follow you on the Twitters at Stephen McCraney. That's Stephen with a PH and McCraney, McCraney on Twitter. Any other place where you want people to find you?
I definitely want people, we'd love if people take a look at the little short comics essays that I put on doodlealley.com.
Doodlealley.com. That will be in the show notes as well if you can't remember it, folks. And then we should also thank Mr. Paul Story, who was here earlier, storyville.com, Storyville on the Twitters, and then Sharon Iverson of AADL.org. Thank you very much once again for all the amazing stuff that you've been doing lately. The last forum was super
cool. Awesome. I see you said Scott's on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also bugged Aaron about getting caught up with the Nemo when you have we're two volumes behind. So
I posted some pictures on Facebook, and the highlight of the day for me was when all these young kids were lining up to talk to Scott and Audra on Skype at the computer monitor, and then when Natalia, who's been on the show before, the local 9-year-old superstar of comics, when she said, "Well, these are the guys who made me want to make comics," I was like, "Oh well, this is your chance." How cool would that have been when we were kids?
Oh yeah.
To be able to do something like that. So you guys are making a huge, huge impact in young people's lives. And for that, tip of the hat. So AADL.org, Sharon Iverson on Twitter. You are on Facebook.
Facebook, yes. Sorry.
How very 2008 of you.
Yes, quite.
I just saw somebody post on Twitter today that saying you're not on Facebook is the new I don't have a TV.
Right.
And then we have David Carter, the EECS librarian. What does EECS stand for?
Electrical Engineering and Computer Science.
Okay. And the video game archivist. Right. What a great job title.
It's a great cover, don't you think, that title?
And then you work at the Architecture and Engineering Library at the University of Michigan. Dave reads comics on Twitter. And then also you have the Ignite Talk. And we've got the Mini Comics Day coming up on March 10th. And that's at lib.umich.edu/minicomicsday.
Correct.
Yep. Looking forward to it. Sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. So thanks, guys.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks, Jersey.
This show will be back in 2 weeks at comicsaregreat.tv at 12:30 p.m. Eastern time. And then it'll be collected as podcasts. This show will be available at, if you download this through Podcatcher, comicsaregreat.com/CAG46. Until next time, everybody, I've been Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com and Jersey on Twitter. Okay, bye.